This is Henry Banks, host of People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. On the show today, I'm joined by 22-year-old Rosebud tribal activist Stephen Antoine and All Nations Executive Director Sheila Lamb. They join me to talk about and give updates on what's happening at the Dakota Access Pipeline site in North Dakota. Please join me and my guest, Sheila Lamb and Stephen Antoine, on People of Color after this news. Welcome to People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Henry Banks. Thanks for joining us this evening. I am here with Sheila Lamb. She is the Executive Director of All Nations Indigenous Center based in Duluth, Minnesota, and Stephen Antoine. He is a 22-year-old student working on his bachelor's degree, and he's also a tribal member from the Sioux Tribe and is enrolled in Rosebud. I'm going to let him and Sheila tell you a little bit more about themselves, and then we'll continue with the conversation. I want to start with you, Stephen. Welcome to the show, both of you.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, Stephen.
At the time I had enrolled in the fall semester for school, I was going to continue working on my bachelor's in mental health. I'd started in mental health because I'd gotten help myself. It helped me become a more wholesome person than what I was. And when I realized what it did for me, that I wanted to do it for someone else who would need it.
Mm-hmm.
I finished my associates the other year as, I think, the only one out of my 10 siblings who holds a degree.
And that's a huge accomplishment.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So congratulations on that. I know you are here in our area. You're speaking to a variety of different groups, and I heard you speak about 4 or 5 days ago in downtown Duluth and was moved by what you were saying and wanted to have you come on the show and talk more about your experience at Standing Rock. I know, Sheila, you've been to Standing Rock a number of times, numerous times. You're the executive director now of the All Nations Indigenous Center in Duluth, and you met Stephen, I would imagine, on that journey.
Correct.
And why don't you talk a little bit about that journey, and then we're going to come back and continue the conversation and hear more from you, Stephen.
Well, staying true to our mission statement at All Nations, our community members made it very clear each time we would poll them that the environment and the water were extremely important to them. So when we made the decision to go to Standing Rock, the community members definitely kicked in supplies of all types, donations of food, and we went out at the end of August, beginning of September for our first trip. We were so moved by what we saw and felt on a spiritual level. The camp that we're in, the Sichangu Oyate camp, is definitely a prayer camp. And over time, got to know Stephen, his mom, and others. It bonds people in a very strong way. And Stephen basically said, "You're my auntie now." And things went from there, and he's staying with us. And I'm just extremely proud of him. I'm very honored to be part of his family and to be part of this movement to protect our water.
Mm-hmm. So you're 22 years old, so, you know, relatively young, right?
And, yeah.
In the grand scheme of things, mm-hmm. You've already accomplished a lot of activism work, and you've done a lot, especially for the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and other American Indian, Native American folks. Mm. What has these experiences over time been like for you? How personally have they touched you?
People have, friends back home have told me that I sound more confident, or the way I walk has changed, that when I speak, my words are more clear and concise. They reach people more, and I think that's why I ended up speaking And to suffer in the way that we have, not only recently before the inauguration or even November, but as we have as a people for centuries, and to be able to speak as not only a man, but as a young person who I will more than likely continue this work for the majority of my lifetime, if not the entirety of it. And it hasn't felt like I've forced myself to. It's feeling more natural the way it's been going. And walking into this radio station, I felt so happy. I felt so excited to just come in here and talk about my experiences. And I would encourage other people to take up this cause, not only for an experience, but as it's necessary for us as people.
Mm-hmm.
Not only as Native Americans, not only as Black people or minorities, but as people as a whole.
Absolutely. So you strike me as a person with lots of compassion and lots of love for your people.
Mm-hmm.
That's very evident to me. You endured so much while at the campsite.
Mm-hmm.
You were shot numerous times with rubber bullets. Can you talk a bit about that and what that experience did to you? Because it's made you a stronger person, as you've alluded to. But getting shot with rubber bullets and all those other things that have happened to you while you were at Standing Rock, how has that strengthened you as a person?
How it strengthened me is that knowing that the amount of pain that I felt and the pain other people have felt, it lets me know that I'm alive. And it lets me know that as long as I have to deal with this pain, it reminds me of why I have to continue this fight.
Mm-hmm.
For a while, I was emotionally distant. I was fairly cold to some people. The vacancy, I suppose, I had in my eyes. It took me a while to come out of that. It used to be very hard to talk to other people or even maintain a conversation for more than a few minutes at a time. I now know how to deal with those things if it comes to that again, or even to help others come out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, in the camps, is that we have to stay together. When we're hurt, we have to help each other. When we fall down, pull each other up in any way that we can.
Mm-hmm. Sheila, you, as I alluded to, have gone to Standing Rock a number of times. Why do you believe it's so important, as Stephen just alluded to, for people to really continue to get involved in this very important work, protecting our water, because it belongs to all of us? And I'm going to have you both talk about some recent actions by the new president with regard to the Dakota Access Pipeline and other pipelines across the country. Why is it important to get involved?
Well, on the first hand, it's obvious that Native Americans have suffered century after century. And when you look at historical trauma now compounded with the PTSD that we're seeing from the camps, that alone is a human rights issue. And if it can affect us, it can affect others. My husband has a saying that the Constitution no longer exists west of the Missouri River. And that's indeed what it feels like, especially as new laws are enacted that we can't dare cover our faces despite bitter cold or it's arrestable, those types of things. Our right to use our voices and to say no to harm that can come to people. People as a whole are in this because we all need water. Our bodies are primarily made of water. We all need water to survive. As I was taught at a very young age and have grown to appreciate more and more as an adult, everything in life can survive very easily without human beings. There is absolutely nothing that needs us, yet we are dependent on everything. And if we don't respect our environment, we don't respect our nature, you know, our waters, everything, we won't survive. We are the one aspect that can bring down everything in the world. So we need to be responsible to ensure that our children, our grandchildren, and those that aren't born yet have a future. We need to understand that we are actually the weakest and most vulnerable of all the species. And part of that is because greed, empathy, those little things that want to keep us in our own little box instead of looking outside the box, are all destructive behaviors. It's time that we stand up and say we want our Earth to survive and thrive. We don't want to destroy what we've been gifted any longer. And we want to ensure something healthy for our future generations.
I'm here with Sheila Lamb and Stephen Antoine. We are talking about Standing Rock, the impact of Standing Rock and other pipelines on our country, and why it's important to get involved. I want to read something here. Came out of Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, January 24th. President Donald Trump signed two orders to move forward with construction of the Keystone XL and Dakota Access pipelines, rolling back key Obama administration environmental policies in favor of expanding energy infrastructure. Now, the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, in a statement, said the $3.8 billion project would contaminate U.S. and tribal water supply, and that it intends to take legal action against this decision. And then the attorneys for Standing Rock said that this was hastily and irresponsibly done. Why do you think at this point in time we're running up against these kinds of situations? I know earlier, Sheila, you talked about greed being at the top of the list. Are there other reasons you believe we're running up against this?
I honestly think part of it is, again, wanting to stay in our comfortable little boxes and ignore the science that's behind all of this, the statistical proof when you're looking at just pipeline leak after pipeline leak. And I like to put it in a very simple form. Nothing man-made is infallible. Everything we've ever made will break. So the rhetoric about if isn't even an option, it's when. We know that. That's why here in Minnesota, we are against Line 3 coming through. The abandonment of Line 3 is another issue. When you look at Standing Rock, we're talking about the drinking water of 17 million people. Bismarck didn't want it. They didn't want to be at risk. And of course, yet again, another reservation is targeted. So the EPA, the environmental impact statements, all those things are in place for a reason. And I commend President Obama for stepping up and moving us more towards green energy and so forth. But now we're going backwards, and we can't allow that to happen.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a quick break and come back. I know recently there was like a 50,000 gallon leak just recently, I believe, in Canada. I want you to comment on that and the impact that that has on us in this country. And the world, even. This is People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm here with Stephen Antoine and Sheila Lamb, and we're going to come back in just a moment to continue our conversation. We'll be right back. Welcome back to People of Color. This is Henry Banks on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm here with Stephen Antoine and Sheila Lamb. They are activists, leaders, from the Native Heritage community, and we're talking about Standing Rock. We're also talking about the impact of the water on each of us and how it's important for us to protect our waters. But Sheila, just recently, within the last day or so, there was an oil leak of 50,000 plus gallons in Canada. Would you like to talk about that and the impact on our nation and our world?
Well, once again, it highlights the fact that this occurred around a reserve, which is their version of a reservation. And that was in Calgary, Alberta. Once again, we're looking at devastation not only for the environment, but the ramifications of human beings' health. And for those that follow John Bolenbaugh, who's the Enbridge whistleblower, we already know the health impacts, anything from cancers to seizure disorders, animals dying, birds just dropping dead in front of people, and so forth. Just the fumes alone from a lot of these oil leaks are devastating. And if you talk to previous pipeliners, those that now stand up and say no pipelines, I think we get the best information from them, because not only do they know the cover-ups that are done, the shortcuts, the illegal dumping, but the majority of them have health issues. And I can speak about that personally, because when my husband was young, he spent nearly 5 years on a pipeline. And his very first job was a cleanup, and it wasn't pretty. Mm-hmm. And he has had health issues that he shouldn't have for a man his age. So I know when John is talking, and Stephen and I were very fortunate to see a screening of his documentary that's getting ready to come out in early February.
John
Bolenbaugh is okay. The gentleman that they call the Enbridge whistleblower. Mm-hmm. He used to work for Enbridge, and he has health effects himself. He lost his uncle. He has a little one that was born with defects, and it's all attributed to a leak in Michigan and what happened there. So he has made it his life's mission. He basically has been blackballed, but he doesn't stop, even mm-hmm. with his own health issues and a child that has special needs, mm-hmm. to make sure that the public is aware and educated on what really happens.
And so, you know, these issues that are going on related to pipelines and contamination and this, that, and other things, not only do they not just affect Native American people, but they affect all of us.
Correct.
And so you both alluded to that, but can you more so talk about, you know, we have a lot of Native American folks who are impoverished, and this further exacerbates the problem for tribal communities, especially in North Dakota. How are people surviving there in light of the recent actions by our new administration in more so moving these projects forward, just kind of undoing everything that the previous administration did? How is that going to impact the sustainability of the Native community in North Dakota, especially Standing Rock?
Well, because the camps have gone towards green energy, sustainability, whether it's compost toilets or having pigs on site, mm-hmm. those types of things, solar energy. So we're basically able to go off the grid and still function in a wholesome, healthy way. And our prayer, our ceremonies are a huge component. But we could not do that without donations of wood, food, winter clothing, teepees, yurts, the list goes on and on.
So the need is still there, you're saying?
Absolutely. And I would imagine right now that the need is going to grow again very quickly, because now we know where we stand. We know that we're getting hit on all fronts, not just in North Dakota. We're facing it now with South Dakota, Nebraska, Florida, Texas. If you look at Keystone XL, if that actually goes through, I believe it's 8 states and provinces that are going, provinces rather, that will be affected. It's huge. We're talking over 1,100 miles of this, the most dangerous of all things to go through these pipelines. And it's not even going to stay here. It's not really for our use. It's to be sold elsewhere. So we're sacrificing our health, our environment, our well-being. And when you target impoverished people, basically you're sending the message that they're less than human. They're less worthy of quality of life. Same message when Bismarck rejected this pipeline, but it was okay to go near Standing Rock's water supply. I spoke to a Native youth out there who talked about her family well of 150 years getting their water from the same source, and this pipeline being less than 2 miles from this water source. So we're talking about survival, and as human beings, we all bleed red. We all technically should have the same rights. What's going to happen if bottled water is all we have and it's $10 for a little bottle? Most of us, the average citizen, won't be able to do that. I heard a woman yesterday I talked to that had been out of the country in a place that there wasn't fresh water. For the 18 days she was there, she had nothing but pop to drink. There was no other option. So we need to be aware and make changes now, or that's the future we have to look forward to. And it is our poorer communities that are most likely to feel the effects of it first.
I need to ask you, though, both of you, do you really believe that this is potentially the obliteration of a group of people and just the wiping out of a group of people? Intentionally, do you believe that's possible?
Genocide for us isn't new. And it's always going to be in the back of our minds as a possibility. But I think we have to look beyond ourselves in this and realize this could be the obliteration of human beings or mass numbers of us at, in the very least. Mm-hmm. We have to pay attention. This is not a red, black, yellow, white issue.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you said
it's
that.
Everyone's issue.
Absolutely. I want to ask you, Stephen, as I looked at your bio, you were shot by rubber bullets, soaked by water cannons, and sprayed by gas.
Yes.
And you still endured for your people.
Yes. It was the only thing that I guess would that kept me going. The initial time I was shot, I didn't necessarily feel it at that time. I was standing next to another member of security that had asked me to help them look for people in the crowd who were either hurt or they needed to be calmed down, because in those situations, not only do people react in a poor manner, whether it's just being distressed, freezing up out of fear, or reacting in an angry manner. Our job there is to make sure our people are safe. We discussed that, and I told him I'd help him. So as I turned to walk away and go into the crowd and look for people, I stumbled. I kind of crumpled a little bit. I got back up, and he asked me, "Are you okay? Did you get shot?" And I told him, "I don't know." The days following, it was rather painful to walk because I had felt everything in full force after that. Just the way everything had panned out before that, I had already got into a heightened sense of security, I suppose. My body went in, had an adrenaline rush.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to that, I had pulled the first person off of the front line, and he was someone who had become a good friend of mine over the course of time that I had spent there. He called me the other day and told me if I hadn't been there, he likely would have died in the situation that he was in. His clothes were frozen from head to toe. When I had picked him up, his arms were frozen. away from his body. They didn't move. The sound of his clothes crackling. Those things I still remember.
It's still emotionally draining, I would imagine, for you. But not only you, you saved somebody's life who didn't know if they would make it. And you saved them. And for me, that's very heroic and says a lot about you as a person, as a young person, especially at age 22, that stepped up to the plate like you have. You know, that's amazing. And you should be very proud of that.
Thank you. If one more thing, I just want to say that this isn't just my story. There's mm-hmm. other people out there who did the same thing. I'm just happy to have the opportunity to speak on behalf of others if they are unable to or they choose not to.
Mm-hmm. You're really such a kind person. I think young people need to hear your story around here and get involved.
Thank you.
They really do. Sheila, how does that make you feel hearing the bravery from this young person who saved many lives, arguably?
I've got to see Stephen in action firsthand, so I know he has a true heart for not only our people, Indigenous people, but he's doing this for all of humanity. It makes me proud and it breaks my heart at the same time. But our youth started this, and it's our youth that are continuing to carry us through. And when we talk about youth, it's those under the age of 25 generally. Stephen is at that prime age of those that said, we're having these dreams about oil coming out of our faucets. We need to do something. And they've heeded the call. And thankfully, we have had our spirits awakened as well so that we can stand with them.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take another break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about what's next, what your hopes and dreams are moving forward. This is People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll be right back. This is Henry Banks. Welcome back to People of Color on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm here with Sheila Lamb and Stephen Antoine, community activists, leaders from the Native Heritage community. Again, honored that you've taken the time out of your schedule to join us to talk about true stories, what's really going on at Standing Rock, the impact of what's going on and how it's affecting all of us in this country, in this region, in this world. Water is important to all of us for survival, yet we're struggling to keep it clean in this country. Stephen, you're a remarkable person, and at age 22, you've done a lot already in saving many, many lives. Are there any other stories you want to share with our listeners about some of the life-saving activities that took place while you were at Standing Rock?
Another one from that night on the bridge, November 20th. There was a woman who had been shot in the leg, particularly the kneecap, and I still can't say for certain whether or not her knee was broken or dislocated. But she was in such a state of distress that it took not only me, but two other people to help lift her into a vehicle. She was rather large, so it was a bit of a struggle because her reaction was, I still dream about it sometimes. Her face contorted in a way that just, a state of terror, I suppose. And the amount of pain she was in, I could understand that. It took us a few minutes, not only to try and calm her down, but to get her into a state of well-being that we could actually lift her into the vehicle. Mm-hmm. There was another person. I can't exactly remember. I can't really say who they were because their faces were covered. They had been subject to a full wave of the tear gas. There was a point in the night that they had fired not only a few canisters, but they started volleying them. And they would shoot them not into the crowd, not only into the crowd, but they had changed their method of attack and shooting it behind us, kind of trapping us in a way that we can walk through the gas and go through that, or we can just be subject to the rubber bullets and the bean bags and the way, and they'd shoot us or hose us. There's this person, they were frozen like a deer in headlights, I guess would be a way to describe it. They stood still, they didn't move, they didn't say anything, they just shook. And I could tell that they were suffering, they were under the effects of the gas and the way it makes you feel. I had been subject to it around 5 times. I'm not gloating in saying that I remember it, but you're going to remember every time you're going to feel that burning sensation in not only your throat, but your nose, your mouth, your eyes. The first time was the worst time, I would say. I was frozen like that. Someone pulled me back and told me, don't rub your eyes, and if you need to throw up, throw up. And so I did, and they poured milk of magnesia onto my face and into my mouth to tell me, rinse it out so you can breathe. It usually is the worst time, I'd say the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Each time after that, it was still painful, but I had been able to experience it enough to at least be able to respond properly.
Time and time again.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. How are you doing today?
My health?
Yes.
For a while after that, I was sick and I was prone to being sick. I'd be sick for up to several weeks at a time. An older man I know, I found video documentation of it. He'd been shot in the chest with a canister of tear gas, and he's asthmatic, and he was posting from Facebook in a hospital. He had to have help breathing because of the way he was in, and I just felt so terrible for him.
Mm-hmm. But you're doing okay?
Myself, I'd say for the most part.
Yeah, I know you care for so many others, and it's really important you get the care that you need to survive and to thrive and to continue helping and building your community up.
Yeah, a lot of people have told me that I need to take care of myself just as I take care of others, and I forget that quite a bit,
mm-hmm.
more so than I'd like to admit. And they extended the invitation to me, Sheila and Terry, to come to Minnesota to kind of take a break and maybe help myself out. And I threw them the off-chance idea, maybe I could talk about this somewhere. And here I am. And I'm very thankful for that.
Mm-hmm.
The changes in my well-being. I'm not so anxious about things when I go places. Or I sleep throughout the night now.
Mm-hmm.
Sheila can tell you, I didn't sleep throughout the whole night, or I wasn't so quiet when I'd sleep.
Wow, I'm going to have Sheila talk about that, but your humility just simply amazes me. And I know as a person who has done activism work for many years, I know we're in good hands with people like you.
Thank you. Absolutely. I really appreciate it.
It's very true. Sheila, how has that been since Stephen has arrived at your home?
Well, I think we're very fortunate that I'm working on my art therapy degree and my husband's a mental health practitioner. And you combine that with Stephen's education, he's got a bit of an edge. But we also utilize some traditional aspects. And one of the elders that I had him speak with told him, you need to talk about this. Don't keep it in the dark. Part of healing is to be able to tell your story. And we need your voice to educate others as well. So over time, it started out even getting Stephen to eat. It would be once a day, and he was very frugal with the amount of food he would take. Mm-hmm. He was not only making sure that our children and us had enough food, but you get in those habits in the camp. You get busy working. You want to make sure other people have food. his sleep patterns were pretty erratic. He would sleep for an hour or two and be up, and you could just see the anxiety taking him into a store or the college or something like that. Same thing. But every day I see it improve. And every day I see him practicing healthy things to help heal himself and to make the PTSD diminish more and more. And I think one of the best things of it is not only is he being given an avenue to tell his story, but he's realizing he does need to take care of himself in order to be able to care for others. And he's taking the time to do so. He's not overly pushing it. Even though he misses camp and you have that urge, that desire to get back in there because the need is so great, he's still answering the needs with the camp, just in a different way now while he takes care of himself.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you, have you met the two outreach workers that work in the All Nations Center, and they're two Native young people? Have you met them?
Yes, I have.
And so how was that interaction? I'm just curious.
Well, currently, it's for me to interact with people who either haven't been to camp or I guess just people not outside of camp. My interaction with people, I need to work on it a little more. I'm still kind of standoffish with people until I actually talk to them, and so that's how most of my interactions go.
Mm-hmm. So they're very good people. So I just wanted to mention that. You want to say who they are, Sheila?
Well, actually, we have three. We partnered with First Witness Child Protection and CASDA. So Jessica is with CASDA.
Yeah, but the two that
but
work in your
two
office.
Native workers are Natasha Cloud and Joe.
Natasha and Joe, I know that they're really very busy outreach workers, and they're reaching a lot of folks in the Native American and other communities to make sure that the quality of life improves for our folks here.
Absolutely.
And they do a very good job at that. And so I was hoping that you met with them because so they can learn a lot from you, and I'm sure you can learn a lot from them and do some collaborative work. You never know what might come of that. I know, Sheila, you're a very busy person too. And so in a moment, we're going to take another break. And when we come back, I'm just going to ask you and Stephen to talk about solutions, to talk about what we need to be doing now, how people can get involved again with your work, both here in this area and in Standing Rock, and more specifically talk about the necessary pieces, what's needed right now in Standing Rock, okay? We're going to take a quick break in just a moment, but I want you to know, Sheila, and I want you to know, Stephen, that your time here and the work that you do in our area, in the region, is being noticed. People talk about it all the time. When I bring folks on that are doing some real positive, good work, I get comments all the time about that. So I appreciate both of you for the efforts that you put forth all the time. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to People of Color on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Once again, this is Henry Banks with Sheila Lamb and Stephen Ancoin. We are here, and Stephen Ancoin, I'm again very, very honored that you're here in our region. I know it's been a oftentimes traumatic time period for you. As a 22-year-old, you've done some things in your life already that some people in their 50s have not accomplished. And so very honored to meet you.
Thank you.
And I work with you, Sheila, so I see you a lot as well. And again, thank you for being on the show. Before we went to break, you know, we've been talking about quite a bit of things related to Standing Rock and the protection of water and the importance of water. And I would like for the two of you to talk now about solutions to some of these things we're experiencing, but also talk about what's needed at Standing Rock and wherever else you do work in the community. So I'm going to start with you, Sheila.
Well, we'll take care of the easy stuff first, which is immediate needs at the camp. Definitely firewood, men's size 10 through 13 sub-zero boots are needed, meats, breakfast meats, lunch meats, hamburger, chicken, those types of things, gas cards because travel's involved to get supplies, to get medical care, those types of things. We use them for generators. Even though they're at a minimum of usage, there are times we just don't have the solar power right now. And until wind energy can be in place, we need to consider those things. Our local community, as always, we're in the Damiano Center now, so we see it even more. The need for blankets, for warm coats, warm boots, and that's of all sizes, all ages. We need to take care of each other. And I think that's part of the need of all of this is standing together as a community. Looking at the common ground we have, let's focus on where we agree first and then start to pick away at where we disagree until we can find healthy solutions for everyone. And we're not always going to agree 100%, but if the majority are saying, as our community has been, we've seen it with Duluth City Council standing in support of Standing Rock, and I would like to commend them for their bravery, for educating themselves, because educating yourself on the truth of these pipelines, not falling into the rhetoric. They want to talk about jobs, for example. The jobs are not permanent. The money earned by the pipeliners and so forth generally aren't even kept in the area. They go home to their own families and states that they live in. And green energy is one of the fastest growing industries. It's a healthier work environment as well as a healthier environment overall. That's a huge part of the solution too. If we want sustainable jobs, if we want healthier workplaces for our workers and so forth, so viewing those aspects, not falling for the rhetoric, educating ourselves on the downfalls, the fact that these pipelines leak, that there's thousands and thousands of leaks that have occurred, and how slow the environment is to recover, the dangers. We need to know those things, learn the health aspects, but work together as a community. Duluth in this region has always been the forerunner for so many different programs and different things that have gone to a national level. Let's be the leader in protecting our water, in growing our economy in a sustainable, healthy way, and just converting over to the green energy. Let's be the ones that really stand up and say, we will give our children a healthy future. We're in this for the long haul. And we will protect our beautiful, beautiful Sacred Lake Superior and our over 10,000 lakes. We have such a tremendous watershed here. Our tourism is such a huge component. We can't allow those things to be affected in a negative way with these pipelines and the sulfide mining. So my biggest solution is let's stand together as one and move forward in a positive way.
And so you said you are located in the Damiano Center, and where is the Damiano Center located?
The Damiano Center is at 201 West 4th Street. We're in room 216, and our community activists are there, our community helpers, which are, again, Natasha and Joe. They help with anything from housing to ICWA cases, to making sure there's food on the table or a roof over someone's head, getting mental health help when it's needed. The list goes on and on. And we firmly believe that when we strengthen the Native community that is a good portion of Duluth, when people are getting healthier, that spills over into the greater community. But also the work we're doing, we work in conjunction with you, for example, or with Peace Church. We're also creating healing where there's no longer color lines drawn. We are becoming a whole healthier community together. Mm-hmm.
That is the beloved community that Dr. Martin Luther King called us all to become, right?
Exactly.
So for you, Sheila, and in your new role as the executive director of All Nations, where does this put you? Does it put you, I know, you know, from an organizational standpoint, you have to be very careful as to how you approach things. But for you personally, this has really reached into your heart and has really touched you in so many deep and profound ways. And you and I have talked about this numerous times. How is that moving forward for you going to affect your work now?
I think it's going to make me actually better at what I do, because when we wrote the mission statement for All Nations Indigenous Center and we were looking at Anthony Hernandez's dream for this center, we are living to that full dream capacity. Mm-hmm. It was our community members, as I said earlier in the show, that really stressed the importance of the environment and the water to them. So we're honoring that as well as doing the other work. And it's creating beautiful partnerships that even though we all may be working towards a healthier environment, we're working towards healthier people. So multiple organizations come together. We get to know each other on a different level. We see that common ground again. And that creates a more productive environment for everyone.
Mm-hmm. So, Stephen, is there anything that you would like to share with our listeners that you believe is needed right now at Standing Rock? What are some of the things that you think the community needs? I know Sheila alluded to some of those things, and, you know, I would like to hear from you as well.
The one thing I can think of at this very moment is the fact that our population in the camps is fairly low at the moment. We're down to around a population around 1,000. And at this moment, I think we could really use help. If they put out the call again, then I believe it is only right to answer that.
Mm-hmm. So is there a way for us, for our listeners to send resources directly to Standing Rock, or Sheila, should it come through All Nations Center? How do you envision that happening?
Well, Facebook has become a huge tool for us. If people would like, they have a couple of options. They can message me on Facebook at All Nations Indigenous Center. They can email me using all lowercase allnationsindigenouscenter@gmail.com. And I can either provide direct links that will help Sacred Stone, Rosebud camps, and so forth that are safe sites, or we can accept PayPal donations directly through our Facebook page, monetary donations, and goods donations. Just send us a message or an email. Let us know that you'd like to make a donation. We will make arrangements to get that from you and get them out to the camps. And we haven't been as great about providing pictures as we had been because we have been so busy both here and in the camps. But we do try to keep people updated with what's going on and give pictures at times. And it's so appreciated, all the baked goods, that type of thing, the care packages we've been able to send. Just know that it's appreciated beyond words.
Mm-hmm. Hopes and dreams for your future, Stephen. What are your hopes and dreams?
My hopes and dreams, aside from not having to worry about the water with pipelines coming through. I hope that one day my children won't have to worry about what's in the water when they drink it.
Mm-hmm. That's excellent. That's excellent. Sheila, your hopes and dreams moving forward.
I hope that we can continue to see a rise in unity among all of us, and that we really do, our legacy is that we've left a healthy future for those children and grandchildren and the babies that aren't here yet.
Mm-hmm. Anything else I'm missing that you want to share?
I just would like to reiterate again that we're at 201 West 4th Street, room 216, and the email for us is allnationsindigenouscenter@gmail.com. Our Facebook page, again, is All Nations Indigenous Center, and I would like to thank Tony Hernandez for his dream, his vision of bringing this center to our region, and for seeing it through, and for the trust that he has instilled in me and the board to carry on, even though he's still overseeing a lot of it. He's trying to expand and open a new center as well, and it's just appreciated all the hard work that he's put in.
Absolutely, and we do wish him well as he's doing the good work. And I thank Sheila Lamb from All Nations Indigenous Center and Stephen Antoine from Standing Rock Sioux Reservation in North Dakota from the Rosebud Tribe. And so I know you're very busy there. So I wanted to give two shout outs. Okay. So I want to thank you for taking the time to be on People of Color today. Have a great evening and a great weekend.